Geek culture has been getting a lot of attention lately, with books and articles hailing the rise of the geek. Well, usually the geek in question is a man, but this hour we celebrate the culture of geek girls. Whether they're passionate about music, books, TV shows, or crafting. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn. Well, get in touch with your inner geek this morning with our guest Leslie Simon. She's the author of Geek Girls Unite, How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. She's also the Senior Creative Director of Warner Brothers Records. And we welcome your take this morning. Is it harder to be a geek girl than a geek boy? And what do you geek out about? Tell us about your favorite area of geek culture. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. And Leslie Simon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start by getting our terms straight. What is a geek?
Well, for the sake of the book, which basically means I can kind of make my own rules, I consider a geek anybody who's super passionate about an area of pop culture, science, technology, anything that they feel like they would like to become an expert in, so people can ask them all about the littlest details, the smallest facts, something that just makes them so happy the more information they know about it. That's really how I define it in the book, and I think that it's just trying to make the word less of a negative label and more of a positive one.
Now, there's been a lot about both geeks and nerd culture, and sometimes they get rolled up into one, but you differentiate, don't you?
I do. Again, just for the sake of the book, and this is all very general, I say that nerd culture and nerds in general tend to maybe have less social skills than the geeky cousins. But again, that's just very general terms, and there are always exceptions.
Well, this book is dedicated to girls, to geek girl culture, as opposed to the boy geek culture that we've heard so much about. Why do you think that geek girls need their day in the sun?
I think that's a really good question. I think that people are finally ready to see girls in places that they don't expect it, and also to see them in a way that's not super photoshopped or perfectly well lit. Girls that are just like them. I think, especially, you know, in Hollywood and various other types of media, guys have started to evolve from this perfectly lit version of, you know, the pinup to just normal dudes that tend to be considered sexy now, which is crazy. I mean, you look at somebody like Seth Rogen or Jonah Hill.
Michael Cera,
exactly. I mean, 20 years ago, would those guys be playing the romantic lead in a movie? I don't think so. not to say that they're not, you know, very attractive in their own way, but there's the typical, you know, what everyone considers the attractive guy or the attractive girl. You've got your Tom Cruise, you've got your Julia Roberts, and I think now that we're kind of opening up as a society to having people with quirks and idiosyncrasies and things that make them more relatable and more accessible. I mean, how many people can honestly relate to somebody like Angelina Jolie? Probably few. But how many can relate to someone like Tina Fey or Amy Poehler or Aubrey Plaza? These are girls that you know. These are girls that you are. And it's really great to finally see them as role models and them as the people that we kind of look up to and aspire to being, instead of other women that may be fantastic in their own right, but slightly less realistic.
Why do you think it's taken so long for geek girls to kind of come out of the shadow?
I think that women tend to follow men in terms of trends. I think that, I don't know if it's a safety thing where we'll see if these guys succeed in this area, and if they do, then the girls will come. I think in a lot of areas, it's just guys first, women follow, unfortunately. But again, I think society is ready to accept not the average, so to say, but just people that are normal, people that are everyday, and people that are doing extraordinary things, but you might not know it by just looking at them.
Well, and there's something that's not traditionally feminine about being someone with an encyclopedic knowledge of an area and being completely obsessed with that area. That's something a little too quirkier in the head, I think, for traditional feminism.
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially in areas of technology or gaming or, you know, fanboy, fangirldom, those are seen as primarily masculine areas of expertise. So it's really great to see these women rising in the ranks and becoming renowned for having not only the talent, but kind of the sass to get to where they need to go.
Now, you break it down in your book into different categories of geek girls, and you really reached out through your networks to try to get in touch with these actual women. And tell us about some of the people that you found.
Sure. Are you referring to the Geek Girl Guild?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. yeah, this was the first book that I, first of all, wrote from start to end just by myself, and I really wanted to involve the reader as opposed to other writing experiences that I had. I felt like, especially with this topic, I don't pretend to know everything. It would be impossible. I would be a robot if I knew everything about every area of geek expertise. So I really wanted to reach out to girls and women out there to tell me what it is they thought about everything. So I kind of sent this query out to friends and acquaintances and asked them to participate in the writing process. So after each chapter I completed, I would send out these kind of fun little surveys, as fun as a survey can be. And luckily, these girls were so forthcoming and took the time to answer these questions and really bare their soul and explain what geekdom meant to them and in all particular areas that are outlined in the book. So not everybody is every type of geek. You're going to have some that lean more towards being a music geek or a film geek. But it was really great to hear from real women, real girls, real geeks about what life was like for them and what their passion means to them and how it affects their life.
Well, you mentioned the music geek and some of the other types. Tell us about the categories in your book. Who's in there?
Oh, there are a lot of categories. And again, this is all, I'm sure I left them out, but for the sake of the book, these were the big ones. We've got your fangirl, your music geek, film, literature, domestic goddesses, of course. We can't forget them. Tech geek, athletic geek, funny girl geek, which is one of my personal favorites, retro geek, which loves anything throwback, and sometimes can be mislabeled as a hipster, and your fashionistas, which also, you know, you can't forget about.
What's interesting about that is that I think when we look at boys who are geeks, men geeks, it seems as though their specialty is not going to be as broad as the categories you've got here. You're broadening the definition a little, aren't you?
I try to. One of the biggest challenges with the book was to really hit the line between beginner and expert, or as geek culture would say, noob and expert. I didn't want to leave anyone out, but I also didn't want to be so exclusive that you felt like you couldn't relate if you didn't have a prerequisite level of knowledge. I'm not sure if I succeeded. I hope that I did. I hope that people who consider themselves the highest of geeks learned one or two things that they might not have known before about their area or maybe another area. And people who are kind of newbies that never really thought about what they loved in that kind of way, realized like, oh yeah, this is totally me, and I can see myself here, and I'm a little bit of that with a dash of this. And it's kind of like a recipe. You just kind of put different amounts in and you come up with your unique self.
Well, tell us about one of the first categories in your book, the fangirl geek. Who is she?
She is very, she's a really amazing girl. She's, you know, typically interested in things like video games and comic books and all of that amazing Comic Con culture. I actually was lucky enough to go to Comic Con in New York this past October, and I saw so many fangirls. It was amazing. She's probably someone who looks up to people like Bonnie Burton, who works at StarWars.com and is super active in the George Lucas community, or she may look to Felicia Day as an inspiration. Felicia is the girl who created this web series called The Guild. She's kind of a sci-fi icon. And it's all about kind of escaping through comics and gaming and cosplay and all of those kind of you know, incredible things.
Now, that category is interesting because that is the category that traditionally was staked out to be for the guys. It was those the men who were into World of Warcraft and, you know, the online role-playing games. And now it's really branched out, and it seems like the girls are not ashamed to be counted among them.
No, not ashamed, and actually very vocal to wanting to be part of that crowd. So many girls game. I have tons of friends who are huge into World of Warcraft and other kind of like role-playing games, as you said. And I don't know why we think of gaming and we don't think girls. We just think of kind of, you know, weak-looking, maybe not weak-looking, but kind of pale dudes sitting in the basement with their little headset, talking to each other and shooting. But girls love gaming. Not only do they love to take the controller and actually play the game, but there are a lot of girls that are programming all the games too, and they aren't as recognized as their male counterparts, but there are so many organizations that are really trying to encourage girls to get into that tech side of things and become programmers and engineers. And I just think it's great because I think maybe some women don't know that that's even a possibility for them, but it is and it should be. And it's exciting to have women kind of invade that space in that way.
Well, we're talking this hour with Leslie Simon. She is the author of the book we're discussing this hour. It's called Geek Girls Unite, How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. She's also the Senior Creative Director at Warner Brothers Records. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. What do you think about being a geek girl? Is it time that the girls stepped up into the spotlight? And what do you geek out about? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert with you today. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up at 1 o'clock, join us for Talk of the Nation as we talk about the economy. Europe's in turmoil and Japan continues to dig out. But from coconut water to cloud computing, there's good news, too. People, businesses, and ideas that succeed. After 1 on Talk of the Nation, a good year for, well, you tell them what it was, on talkofthenation.org. This hour, we're talking about geek culture with Leslie Simon, who is celebrating geek girls in her new book, Geek Girls Unite, How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. Has geek culture finally come into its own, and what do you geek out about? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And we take our first phone call now. We've got Dominic joining us from Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Dominic, what do you geek out about?
I am a self-professed geek. I play Warcraft and all that jazz, but I called because we're talking about geek girls, and my wife is a geek, and that's one of the main reasons I married her.
What is her area of expertise?
She geeks out mostly about sci-fi movies and TV shows. She was the first woman I ever met that had almost an encyclopedic knowledge of Doctor Who.
Aha. Now, is she a fan of, which doctor does she like best?
Her favorite doctor is David Tennant.
Excellent choice. All right, well, thank you so much for calling up. And do you think, Dominic raises an interesting point there, Leslie, do you think that geek girls are having less trouble getting the guy lately, that it's more attractive to be a geek?
Oh, geez. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that, like Dominic said, which is so great, I think people aren't as surprised when girls like things now that are typically not seen to be in their wheelhouse, like, you know, loving Doctor Who or Star Wars or things like that. I think it all depends about the guy and the girl involved. Dating is hard just as it is. and having two geeks in the mix, I mean, you would hope that they find each other and love blossoms and, they walk off into the sunset and recite, you know, comic book verses to each other. That would be amazing.
In the ideal geek fantasy romance world.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's go next to Maria from Pleasant Prairie. Hi, Maria. Maria, are you there? Let's try again. Maria, are
Hello?
You with us? Hey,
yes,
there
I
you
am.
Are. Okay,
yes,
thanks.
Hi. It's Marina. Listen, you know what? I was thinking as a category. For me, it's more like a women's movement. I'm more into self-actualization. Politics. If you're talking about role models, as an African American woman, I would look to Barbara Jordan, Hillary Clinton, Sandra Day O'Connor. I encourage other women who ordinarily would tend to put themselves in mid management. Or pink, or more conservative, more traditional pink positions, and help them find their own yellow brick road. I'm more into leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can cite various whatever field of interest, and say, hey, listen, what about this? You know, you can, because you can pick a personality and go and, like, and go further into it. And I have a passion for that. I mean, my brain just clicks. My husband looks at me, and a lot of times he'll roll his eyes and I'm like, oh, there she goes. There's another 20 minutes worth of it. You know, and say, oh, do you know that you can do this, 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 and this, and this, and this? And, you know, and do you know that this person, was basically in your same path, and other women will look at you and they'll realize, gee, I didn't know that, you know, and that's my passion. In addition to NPR, I'm sitting out in a hotel in a car because I can't get you in the hotel.
Wow.
I'm like, aww. I cannot, if I can't get an NPR anywhere in the United States, I'm like a junkie. I go through withdrawal.
I hope there's a category in your book, Leslie, for NPR geek.
You know what that is? I left out a very important geek. Marina brings up a great point. I outline political geeks in the book. I don't know why that slipped to my mind. It's probably a little too early for me to remember everything. but she also brings up a great, great point, which is that when there isn't a path laid out for you, make your own. That is one of the things I tell people all the time. If you don't see growth, if someone's not making room for you to go where you need to go, then you need to make your way your way. I think a lot of people tend to, regardless of what profession or what area they're in, if if things are hard or if things aren't laid out, you know, like, oh, I don't know if there's growth. I don't know if I can become this. I don't know if I can aspire to that. Well, try. And if that doesn't work, try a different way. I think, you know, everyone's used to saying no. They're worried about hearing no. But no doesn't really always mean no. It just means, no, this won't work, but try something else. And one of my personal mantras is, if you don't ask, the answer is always no, which is a really simple thing to think about. But it's true. I never would want somebody to give up on who they want to be or where they want to go because it's not an easy path to their destination. So Marina brings up a great, great, great point. And that's something that's really highly encouraged in the book, is just to have girls be supported throughout what they want to do and just kind of stop at nothing to get there.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Marina, and thank you for calling attention to the Public Radio Geek as well.
And yes, absolutely.
You do have a couple categories for these deep thinking geeks in your book, too, Leslie. You've got the political geek and you have literary geek as well.
Yes, 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 yes. Both are a little bit more cerebral, I would say, than some of the other geeks, especially I think the literary geek, just because the activity that she loves is such a solitary one. It's not like, you know, people sit in groups and read out loud to each other and interact. I mean, book clubs are obviously huge, but it just by nature, reading, writing is a lone, you know, profession or activity. Mm. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, let's take another call next. We have Rachel joining us from Madison. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
I would say I'm a total geek girl about music and certain bands. I totally geek out about bands like Radiohead, and I spaz about it with everybody, basically. you know, it's just like I think about, like, everything I tell my sister, and like, she doesn't really care, but I spaz about it anyway, like all the band members' names and their favorite food and all their B-sides and their complete discography. And
oh yeah,
she even called me and said, you know, you're a total geek about Radiohead, you should totally call into NPR about it. And
yep.
So it's just like, I have everything by them, and, you know, I go on the internet and I talk to other people that are huge fans, and they meet up and we go to concerts, and it's just a really good time, and that's awesome.
Well, fantastic. Thank you, Rachel. And I have a feeling that you are the kind of geek girl who is close to our guest's heart, right, Leslie?
It's true. It's very, very true. The minute she said music geek, I got a little bit of butterflies.
Because that's you.
That's me. That's totally me. Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I think that's my hugest passion ever since I was little. And I would just, you know, make mixtapes off the radio and want to learn everything about every band or singer that I ever loved. And not all brag-worthy people, mind you. I went through my embarrassing phases, but there's something just about just an amazing song or a band that makes you happy no matter what's going on in your life. They really become your soundtrack, your personal soundtrack, and it's almost like your life becomes a little bit of a movie because you've got this amazing score to accompany all of the highs and lows that you're going through. And I just can't even imagine. I mean, I chose to follow that as a profession too. I really wanted to blend my two loves, which were writing and music, and that's how I kind of got started after college, was writing about music. It was a pretty easy peanut butter and jelly sandwich there. I am so lucky that what I can do every day is what I love, and help what I love become other people's love. I'm a really lucky girl.
Well, you're pretty upfront about your own geeky pursuits. In fact, here's a pleasure of yours that you make a lot of time for, I gather.
Yeah, yes. I just realized. Oi is the funniest word in the entire world. I mean, think about it. You never hear the word oi and not smile. Impossible. Funny, funny word.
Oh, dear God.
Poodle is another funny word.
Please drink your drink, Lorelai.
In fact, if you put oi and poodle together in the same sentence, you'd have a great new catchphrase, you know? Like, oi with the poodles already. So from now on, when the perfect circumstances arise, we will use our favorite new catchphrase.
Oi with the poodles already.
I'm telling you, it's knocking what you talk about Willis right out of first place.
Lorelai.
A clip there, of course, from Gilmore Girls, which is one of your geek up pursuits.
Yes. Yeah. Adore it with all my heart.
Now, even though it's over, this is when you still make time for in your life.
It's true. Well, it lives on the Soap Network. The Soap Network. After the original 90210, I believe. There's two episodes back to back. Not like I memorized the schedule on the Soap Network or anything, but I have to know that that's true. That show and I mean, there are a couple TV series that I immediately formed an unreal attachment to, that being one of them, Freaks and Geeks was another one. Actually, the original 90210, the high school era, was another one. But Gilmore Girls, I'm not sure what it is. I think the dialogue is so quick and witty and insightful, and the characters are amazing. And I don't know, I just get lost in it. And next thing I know, I want to live in Stars Hollow and take a dance class at Miss Patty's and grab a cup of coffee at Luke's. And it's really a problem for me. But when you meet, it's the same thing with any love. It's when you meet people who have that same love and that same care for something, it really unites you. You feel like you found a kindred spirit and somebody that totally gets what it is you love in life. And that's a beautiful thing.
Well, we have an email here from Julian Ricelake, who says, I'm over 40 and think I might fit this category. I recently discovered manga and anime. Used to think, what have people seen that stuff? But now I love it, even though it seems to be mostly aimed at young people. They're like soap opera meets Looney Tunes.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're ever too old to become a geek. I mean, unless you stop discovering anything, you know, if you were just shut yourself off to discovery, I think you can be a geek at 12, 24, 96, doesn't matter. But yeah, anime is such a huge thing, and that's so awesome that she could discover it a little later in life but still relate to it and love it the same as, you know, a teenager would.
Well, thank you so much for that, Julie. And from Chris, I've had many geeky hobbies, including making chainmail, crafting bullwhips, and props for costumes at anime conventions. I also play a wide variety of geeky games like Halo, World of Warcraft, and D&D. I go to anime and sci-fi conventions, and I met my wife at my first anime convention. And he proudly works as an IT administrator for our whole company and only 2 years out of college. So, you know, it used to be, I get the old social paranoia was that if you're too into Dungeons and Dragons and playing these role-playing games, you're not going to amount to anything. I guess not true.
No, not true at all, especially with cosplay now. Being, you know, taking that experience outside of our basements and bedrooms and into, you know, the real world, you are actually interacting with people, and it has that same feeling of a technical game, but you're interacting, you're learning, and sure, you might be in character, and sure, you might be wearing a costume, but eventually that does end, and these are people that love the same thing you do, and you might not have met them if not for this common interest, and it's so great to have a kickstart connection with somebody in that kind of way. I think, especially the older you get, it's harder to make friends outside of what you do on a daily basis, whether that's work or school or what have you. I think that anything that puts two people together, three people, five people, in a common area that they all love and appreciate is rare. And if you can find that, especially as you get older, that's insane. That's amazing.
Now, have you made a lot of friends through your Geek Girl stuff?
I have, actually. I've met a lot of people at the various events that I've been to, and just talking to them about their stories. And, you know, there are a lot of girls that come up and just say, I think I'm a music geek with a little bit of fashionista geek mixed in. It's like a recipe. Like I was saying, it's kind of fun to figure out, well, I'm a little of this with a dash of that and a teaspoon of this. I've met a lot of great people and people that I think I'm going to keep in touch with for a really, really long time.
Well, we have another clip here to listen to. This is another one of your favorites. This is Jenny Lewis, the indie music goddess.
Hi, Larry Mueller here. Many of us will see
Okay, Larry Mueller is not the indie music goddess. Let's try that again.
It's all the good that won't come out of them, and all the stupid lies they hide behind. It's such a big mistake, standing here on this frozen lake. It's all the good that won't come out of me.
Leslie, can you tell us about Jenny Lewis?
Sure. Well, I first became aware of Jenny really when she was in True Beverly Hills, because that was, I don't know about you, but when I would get sick and I was a kid, there were like two or three movies that I would always have my mom go get for me, and they always made me feel better. And one of those was True Beverly Hills. I could just watch that.
What was
forever.
It?
True Beverly Hills.
True Beverly Hills, okay.
Yeah, with Shelley Long. Craig T. Nelson, and Jenny Lewis was an actress, and she played the youngest girl in the Wilderness Girls troupe. It was kind of like a Brownies / Girl Scout troupe, and they were the ragtag Beverly Hills troupe of rich kids, and they had to compete against the, you know, rough and tumble other girls in the Wilderness. Yeah, I'm getting off point. But it was an amazing movie. And so she started out as a child actress and was in a lot of different movies. And then she kind of traded that in for a guitar and started this indie rock band, Rilo Kiley. They signed with Saddle Creek Records, which was based out of Omaha, Nebraska. I believe they were the first non-Omahaian band to be signed to Saddle Creek. So once I saw her on stage, she's amazing. She's really just intoxicating to watch. And she's kind of evolved over the years from a little bit of an indie rock goddess to more of a kind of sunny California, Laurel Canyon, Americana goddess. Mm-hmm. But she just has such a great lyrical mind, and her songs just really capture, I don't know, heartbreak and being lovelorn and having unrequited love. And I mean, what girl, geek or otherwise, can't relate to all that good stuff?
We're talking with Leslie Simon this hour. She is the author of Geek Girls Unite: How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. She's also the Senior Creative Director at Warner Brothers Records. And we're curious to know what you think. Why do you think that it is the time of the geeks right now? Geek culture is pretty big, both for men and for women. And we're seeing the ascension of the geek. Also celebrating Geek Girls this hour. So what do you think it is about this time that makes it great for geek girls and for geek boys? And what are you a geek about? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And we'll listen now as we go into the break of another band that our guest this hour, Leslie Simon, is nuts about. This is from her early geek days. This is the band called Dashboard Confessional.
Sleep with all the lights on. You're not so happy, you're not secure. You're tiny, cute in your blue jeans, plastic just like everyone, just like everyone. And that face you paint is impressing. Most of us is permanent.
I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Leslie Simon, who is the author of Geek Girls Unite, How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. She's also the Senior Creative Director at Warner Brothers Records. And we go to our next call. We have John with us from Waupaca. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to endorse the whole idea of this phenomenon. I am married to a woman who is a former manager of a comic shop, and I write comics for a living. And the author mentioned Bonnie Burton from Star Wars a while ago. I actually write Star Wars comics, and my latest project is one with a female lead. And you know, one of the reasons that we decided to do that is, you know, some of the other Star Wars comics we had done in the past, you know, I kept expecting to see, you know, people costuming at the conventions as, you know, the male characters, the protagonists, the, you know, the villains, those characters. And yet it was the female leads that people were always dressing up as. And I think what I realized is, you know, we had strong female characters. You know, they weren't scantily clad or anything. It gave them options to dress up in. We have a series called Knight Errant, which has a a lone female Jedi running around in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, John. And Leslie, what do you think about that?
I think it's so amazing, especially what he was saying about not being scantily clad, which was always awesome. I remember looking at pictures from comic conventions, years and years ago, and they would kind of be, you would think that they'd be like busty women in these little, like, I'm going to get you bikinis. But I think it's a good thing that they're not being objectified like that, and they're just your regular, you know, I think it's great.
And even though women have made a lot of inroads in the comics world, it sort of seems like it's been one of those last holdouts. How is it looking for geek girls in the world of comics?
I think it's going really well. I mean, you have like the Buffy comic, which is huge. That obviously features a female protagonist, and you've got comic writers like Gail Simone, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. If not, forgive me, who does Birds of Prey, which is a huge series, and Joelle Jones, who's more of an up-and-comer. A lot of girls are doing their own comic books, and like I was saying before, if they couldn't fit in a series that was already out, they decided to make their own. And, you know, these kind of alt comics are becoming really popular, and it just goes to show that if your path isn't already set up for you, you make your own.
Well, let's take another, let's see, this is an email actually from Heather, who says, geeking out about a show I like, Gilmore Girls and Seventh Heaven, are what got me through the first few years of college. My entire wing would gather to watch it. I have so many wonderful memories of snuggling up with my friends and watching Gilmore Girls. My best friend and I bonded over Gilmore Girls and Seventh Heaven and just can't get enough. We found that kindred spirit in each other and still geek out. Yeah, Gilmore Girls kind of does that to people, doesn't it?
It does. It's like,
what is it about Gilmore Girls?
I'm not sure. I think the lead characters, obviously, I think of Lorelai and Rory, are so quirky and unexpected on television. They talk fast, they eat fast, they drink coffee fast, and their dialogue is just, it's not even dialogue, it's just banter for an hour. I think on one of the DVD extras that I've probably watched a million times, you know, the average script is, 50-some pages for a regular hour-long series?
and their scripts were 80 or 100.
Whoa.
Which just shows you how packed with dialogue they, you know, they had to memorize. The storylines were, it's like there's magic in that show. Everybody kind of wants those towns like Stars Hollow to exist. And I'm sure they do out there. And please email in, because I would love to know where they are so I can move there.
Right.
For most people, it's such a huge escape because it's so different from where they are and where they live. I mean, maybe people don't know each other's business in the same way, and there isn't a diner where you go in and you get your coffee every morning and they know what you want before you even walk in the door. It's that familiarity that is so easy to escape in. And people really are very territorial over that show. They have a lot of love and care for what people say about it, what people think about it. And even though it's over, I mean, it ended years ago, there is talk of a movie. I mean, there's always talk of a movie, but I don't even know. I couldn't even begin to think of where that would start or where it would end or how that would work. But I guess it's the same thing with Arrested Development, except that I think Arrested Development may have ended a little too soon. But, you know, that actually is being resurrected and being made into another series for a season and then another movie. I hoped that that would happen, but I never really thought it would, just because people didn't pay enough attention to it the first time around. I didn't think they would get it the second time, you know, they'd get a second chance. But I could just live in episodes of Gilmore Girls for the rest of my life, and I hope that doesn't sound like the lamest thing on the planet, but I think the people that like Gilmore Girls will agree with me, and they'll want to book a room at the Dragonfly Inn next to mine.
I agree with you. I'm a little embarrassed to say it. I don't know why. There's something about that show that's almost become, I don't know, a little embarrassing to be too into, but you have to you have to own up to your love of it.
Yeah, and you don't have a lot of fair weather Gilmore Girls fans. You don't have people that are like, I could take it or leave it. You've got the people that turn it on and they're like, they're talking too fast, it's too much talking, I can't watch it, and turn it off. Or you've got the people that are just like, oh my God, who do you like better, Luke or Christopher? You know, these huge debates. And I think it's the same type of thing as like a Veronica Mars or a Buffy. Maybe obviously without like the sci-fi or sleuth aspects, but you care for those characters and you just come to love them. And there are so many characters to choose from because it's like a rotating, you know, group of just, it's like a motley crew of characters. It's amazing.
Well, speaking about, you know, Rory and Lorelai from Gilmore Girls, who have this funny banter back and forth, there is a category in your book of the funny girl geek. And this is, I think, a great one, because being funny has something that always hasn't been that available to women. There have always been funny women, but it hasn't always been cool to be a funny woman. And now you're celebrating them in your book.
Yeah, I think that being funny can sometimes be off-putting and intimidating. If you're a girl, especially if you're with guys that aren't used to females having a sense of humor, I listened to this great podcast called How Is Your Week with Julie Klausner, who's a comedian and a writer, and she had Sarah Silverman on the other day, or maybe it was a couple weeks ago, and she said something really funny, like, nobody wants to have that are women funny debate, like it's a tired debate. And she was saying how women aren't funny, funny women are funny.
Mm.
And it's so true. I think that there are so many women that are afraid to speak up and to say something kind of off the wall. I don't know if their fears are going to get laughed at in the wrong way, or they are just going to silence the room or what, but I think that there's nothing more that displays more confidence than a girl who lets it rip.
Well, and Tina Fey is a great example. She's a woman who has got a lot of cultural cachet right now.
Absolutely. And I think she's obviously a huge influence, and I think she's just a really big role model. She probably doesn't realize what she's done for geek girls, or, you know, just women in general, but being like a showrunner and having this comedy, this 30-minute comedy that you don't even know what to do with it because it's so many different things. You know, it's got the slapstick, it's got the pratfalls, but it's also got very intricate wordplay jokes and just not your typical sitcom. But she comes off as this just, what can't she do? She can basically do anything. She writes, she acts, she laughs, she cries, she Julianne's fries. I mean, what doesn't she do? I think I could just watch her forever. I could listen to her talk and I could just watch her forever because there's something that not only I relate to in her, but also I aspire to be. You know, she's a really great role model for girls that aren't afraid to hold their tongue and to really put themselves out there and be funny, more importantly, just be who they are, you know?
Well, we have a little taste of Tina Fey, just a short clip here of Tina as Liz Lemon.
I'll have that party tonight, and it'll be fun, and you'll all see that I'm fun, so screw both of you, and screw everybody out here. Liz Lemon is having a party, and there ain't no party like a Liz Lemon party, because a Liz Lemon party is mandatory.
That's a good little riff.
Pretty funny.
Just a taste of Tina Fey there as, you know, a woman who is changing, I think, the women feel about how they can be and how funny they can be, maybe.
Yeah, and I think obviously Liz Lemon is a character, and that's not Tina Fey as a person, but even Liz Lemon as a character, I mean, I think she's rad. I would be her friend. I know she doesn't really have any friends, but I would, like, sit and eat cheese and watch, you know, QVC with her. I don't have any problem doing that. And you know what? Sometimes I do, and she's not there. So we don't need one.
Leslie, what would you say to young girls now who are growing up and are discovering their own interests and tastes in culture? What would you say to encourage them about embracing their inner geek?
I think that, at least just speaking from my own experience, I didn't really embrace the things that I loved until I was like in my, I would say, early 20s. In high school and middle school, I kind of felt like what I liked wasn't cool because my friends didn't like it. So instead of trying to find people that liked the same things, I thought, well, by geography, these are my friends, and I should like what they like. It'll just be easier that way. And I'm not sure that was the right way to go. So I would definitely encourage girls to not give up on what they love and what their interests are just because there isn't an immediate network of like-minded people around them. I mean, as opposed to when I was a teenager, which wasn't like eons and eons ago, but the internet wasn't a part of our daily lives in the same way that it was now. So it's not like I could just go online and find people who liked Radiohead or whoever, you know. It required a little bit more legwork. But now I think it's so great because you're so close to anybody that loves the same thing that you are, even though they could be in Singapore or they could be in Alaska. They're still really close to you. So definitely tell girls not to give up if you haven't found your sisters from another mister right away. That journey, that path might take a little longer, but it'll definitely be worth it when you find people that love things in the same way that you do. I would also tell people, if they're looking to make their passion their profession in some way, to really talk to people who have the jobs they dream about, first on a local scale, and then they could do it on more of a national scale. But if you want to own a gallery, talk to a local gallery owner. If you want to be an event planner at a bookstore, t- talk to somebody at a bookstore, these people, especially girls and women in the field, want to help. And frankly, who doesn't like talking about themselves? It's a very little known fact.
And we are out of time, Leslie. I'm sorry, but it's been such fun to talk with you today. I really appreciate you being with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Leslie Simon, the author of Geek Girls Unite, How Fangirls, Bookworms, Indie Chicks, and Other Misfits Are Taking Over the World. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.